Now, we can do this the easy way, or we can do it the hard way. The choice is yours.
Three's the hard way, three's the hard way, three's the hard way.
You
want to
do it the easy way or the hard way?
With over 30 years of combined wrestling experience and knowledge, nearly every bit of it Woody's, Georgia Wrestling History presents Three the Hard Way.
Welcome once again to Three the Hard Way. I'm Matt Hankins. I am joined by my co-host and the rock of this whole outfit, Big Wood. Woody, how you doing, bud?
Oh, I'm doing good today. How you doing, Matt? You have a good weekend, buddy?
I'm all right. I did have a good weekend. So before we're going to get right to it tonight, boys. As a matter of fact, I think it's this idea that birthed this whole podcast, because me and Woody were sitting around running our mouths as we're so apt to do, and Woody had the idea of just going over some matches on YouTube with some local guys and just kind of giving a critique of it, an overview of it, and I said, you know what, that'd make a good segment on a podcast, so if we wrap that around another 55 minutes or so, I think we got ourselves a thing, so we're going to try that tonight. I guess I'll set the stage a little bit of it. This is not our attempt at $5 wrestling or world-class flea market or any of that. I didn't pick these matches, and Woody didn't pick these matches because they were good or bad. We don't really know. I just went through a lot of the local talent, saw some clips that were available, and we didn't watch them beforehand to say, oh, man, we're going to sit here and we're going to trash this guy. Now, if it turns out to be a bad match, there's definitely going to be some critique involved, but we're just going to give an honest opinion of what's going on. And tonight's match, the first match, our debut match, is the debut of Fred Yeha in what many people would consider the biggest spot that he was in. Now, Fred, I know, had done a little wrestling in the backyard and sort of a thing he had with his friends. And a matter of fact, a thing that he continues to do now called BACW that he films for YouTube. But this was the first time Fred was under the lights. And this happened at the Academy Theater for PCW. I was in the audience for this. And I don't know if you've ever heard about it, Woody. but we could be really rough on a newcomer. You got a pass because you were smart enough to come out with the right shirt on.
Yeah, y'all were a very boisterous crowd, and let everybody know how you felt for sure. I'm going to make an evil attempt to watch this with you because I'm having a little streaming problem right now, but I'm going to do my best to try to keep up.
Well, I'll talk you through it best I can. We've synchronized our swatches, as it were. So I'm going to count us down, Woody. We're going to start her off in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So this match is Fred Yeha and Chip Day. Now, Chip at this point had been in PCW for a while. He was not too long in the business himself, but he had certainly had a lot of experience because he'd been in Rampage, he had been with Corey Hollis, been with Jimmy Rave, so Chip was certainly the veteran in this situation, and this was Fred's debut, and he was trying to debut as a heel, and that did not work well in PCW just because Fred was good enough that we're just like, no, we don't buy that as a heel, but right off the bat, you see Fred taking control, grabbing that arm, pretty basic stuff thus far. And I think a lot of what will be interesting in this particular match is to see what we see now versus where both of these guys have progressed to.
Yeah. Well, I'm, like I said, I'm having a little streaming problem. It's kind of blotchy and jumpy on me, so I'll do the best I can.
Well, I'll talk you through it. We've seen them just kind of chain a little bit in the beginning, and we see them do a nice little standoff. Again, Fred, this is the first time anybody sees him. It's kind of something to take in because usually a guy that's making his debut doesn't look like Fred does. And Chip is kind of – you can tell that the plan was to keep it really simple in the beginning and,
yeah,
and just kind of take it one step at a time, and right, they keep going back to the arm lock. And ain't nothing wrong with that.
Fred,
with that if you know what you're doing.
Fred, this being his first, you know, debut match, his confidence level is high, and I believe a lot of that has to do with, you know, his amateur background.
Yeah, yeah. They're right there. They've traded off a couple strikes, and Chip keeps backing off, giving him a little breath, working the crowd, and then Chip starts firing with those big old forearms. And Fred
very
goes back.
Good.
He's holding
very
his own.
Oh. Nice.
He's holding
forearm.
His own. Both of these guys are very similar in their
good
strikes. You know, their
vertical reversals. Nice punching by Yeha.
And then Chip goes to work. He puts him down, bounces off the rope, and, I mean, there's no better kicks in this state than Chip Day. And right there, after a big old kick, instead of wasting time, he went straight for the cover. Only got a two count, but that's super important, is when you land a strike like that, try to pin the man. The object of the match is to win. And then a big chop. Now, that's my favorite part of this match from a critique standpoint. Chip lays Fred in the corner, gives him a big chop, and instead of just standing there and doing five or six more, Fred bails out because it really hurts. I think that that's something that we don't see near enough of. I love to see a guy get chopped four or five times as much as anybody, and I'm not saying that there's not a place for it, but sometimes just initial sting, you know, why would you stand in there if this guy's tearing your hide with these chops and you've got some space to run away?
Yeah, I mean, that goes to the point of if somebody was punching you in the face, would you just stand there and let them? Would you not try to move your head, or would you not try to do something to defend it?
Right. Giant, big old European uppercut, but he fires out of there and gets kicked, but there it is. And there we go. Big double clothesline, both guys down. So far, so good, especially for a debut match. The thing about Fred is he looks a lot like he does now. I think there is some room for improvement at his point. I worry that he might have plateaued just a little bit. I think he's trying to get out of that now, and, you know, he's got had that spot with the ball and tried some things with different guys that he's trying to work up and do a little bit of stuff differently right now. But a lot of what I see here, that drop kick off the ropes, sits Chip down, hits the ropes, drop kicks in the back of the head. I think I've seen that in every Freddie Yeha match I've ever watched.
Oh, yeah. You know, like I said, once again, I think a lot of Yeha, he's way ahead of the game, you know. And he drawed a big card this first match with Chip Day because, you know, Chip Day's a well-traveled and well-thought in the state. You know, he could have easily been, you know, winner of Wrestler of the Year this year easily.
Yeah, yeah. And Fred comes in with a giant chop, too. And once again, he gave Chip space, so Chip walked out of the corner. Now, Fred keeps talking, but he got out of that corner. And, oh, that fisherman suplex, again, that's a staple of the Freddie Yeha match, and then keeps it hooked, rolls through, and then goes to the Russian leg sweep. He has done that consistently from here on out. And I'll say this about Chip. He is doing an excellent job of driving this match.
It's a very, very good forward match. It's not super fast pace, but it's solid in going forward the whole time.
Saw these two in the finals of the AIWF America's title, and that was much faster. You know, Fred has his confidence has only grown, so he wants to go 100 miles an hour. That was much faster and much more brutal. But this one's been pretty brutal itself. And you see Fred already showing those signs of the mat wrestling, the submission, yanking that arm, rolling it through, and then trying to get a quick pin. But then he was trying to work his heel thing, so he immediately goes to a choke over the throat. You know, at the time, I didn't remember him being this good of a heel, but he's doing a pretty good job of it. As a matter of fact, he may be better at it right there than he is in some of his heel runs now.
You know, he does a lot more. He does a lot more of the show now, and then I mean, he still has all the work ability, but he just does a little more of the show now.
Yeah,
you know,
those
working the crowd and stuff, and still a very sound mat technician for sure. Probably one of the best, if not the best in the state, for somebody that can really tie you up. He's the guy.
And Chip starts to lay those kicks in, though. That usually spells just about the end of it. And there's another one right on the button. And nobody makes a better sound on a kick than Chip Day. And Enziguri, back of the head.
And down goes.
And then fires up.
Great job of selling it the way he moves his forehead. When he moves his forehead across the ring and selling, not looking up and jumping up too quick.
And then the big day of the dead, the two knees in the corner, but nope, Fred kicks out of it. And I'm surprised to see that. You know, I'm surprised to see Chip hit a signature move on him and he come out like that. But it might have not been the best idea, because now he's on his knees and the educated feet are going to work. And that's a good sell, though, just rocking almost to the floor with it. And then Yeha cuts one of them off, but again, those feet. And here's the shadow.
Back off.
Excellent German suplex in the bridge. Fred Yeha has won the match.
Picture perfect German suplex. You know, both shoulders evenly. You know, a lot of times when you see a German suplex like that, a guy's to one side or the other, but that was dead on. And it took two to tango. Right on.
That's true. That's true. But that was much better than I expected it to be, just because, again, of the experience level of Fred and that being the first time those two had been in the ring together. And, you know, credit to Fred for holding his own in his debut, but the real hero of that one is Chip Day for keeping that thing in a pace, keeping that thing in a way that Fred that giving him his best chance to succeed and do well in the match.
Most
and,
definitely,
and
two of the best in the state right there. You know, one more of a season at the time, and the other one was very green, but very way ahead of the game, I would say, for it being his debut. You know, he was pretty solid.
We had seen Fred a time or two there, doing some things under the mask, which was the PCW way. You're gonna earn your stripes, but to get a win in his first match, the Booker must have saw something in him.
Yeah, that's
somebody
that's unheard
must
of.
Have taken a shot to him.
that's definitely unheard of, because it was probably a year and a half. Well, I'm exaggerating. Over a year before I won a match when I started. And
really.
Yeah, that was a screw job then when they did that. So, really had to pay your dues. I mean, of course, it's a little different ball game now, too. You know,
it is a little different.
You know, it's the same, but it is different. You know, wrestling, I want the word, you know, a lot of people like to say evolved, but I don't like to say evolved. I think it's kind of like a tree. It's grown limbs. And each limb represents something in the wrestling business, different style, you know, different things, you know. So, you know,
yeah, I think that's spot on.
Yeah, it's
wrong. Exactly right.
But when you come down
to
the
root
of the tree, yep.
An evolution means that it's become something that it wasn't, and I think that's sort of that is our dirty little secret. Is that we can't let it become something else. It has to be what it is, because that's the way that it works. And you know, if you look at where wrestling came from, you know, it started out in the carnivals and at the sideshow, and you think about what it has, as you said, kind of grown up and branched out to be. The core of it has worked for 100 years.
Yes.
And there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And I think that's where sort of the fussing and the fighting between the old school and the new school gets to the most heated point, is when some of the new school guys don't quite, they say they want to save wrestling, but they really don't understand what that means. To say you need to save it means that it needs, if there's something it needs to be saved from. And I think the old school guys are like, no, it's doing just fine. The fact that it still exists means it's doing just fine, because look at all the other things that came around the same time it did, and they've gone by the wayside.
Yes.
We don't fight bears anymore for whatever reason.
You have, like you said, once again, there's so much more to do in the world today, you know. So you have to change. You have to change with the times, you know. People change, attitudes change, interests change. And you got to give everybody a little bit of what they want, you know. So.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we saw it in that match. That was two guys that really wrestled a newer style match. Stylistically, it fit much more with what you would see in ROH versus what you would have seen in, say, WCCW. But
yeah.
At the same time, I don't think anybody would have any problems with how that match went from the point of this is wrestling. And this is how it should be done. Well, we've got a loaded show today. We've got guests on the line. Woody, we're going to do something we haven't done. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to come right back and get to it.
Ooh-wee. Yo-Yo Bro, Kamala here. Thinking back when I was in the former WWF, all the things that went on. I was just like the floor sweeper, the janitor, who you could just talk over his head and it would never be picked up. But let me tell you something, I remember it all. You kept me broke when I know I put asses in the seats. But you paid your lovers, the one that go meet to meet. Your drug test a sham, you let who you want pass. Now Steve been there for 25 years, a damn sure piece of ass. I saw you one time, put your head in Rikishi's ass. Now that was on national TV, everybody saw that. They sure did. But I could tell that you felt at home the long it lasts. Push it and pull it. Push it and pull it. The fat little Vinny starts screaming like a girl. Push it! You know that's what he like. Now he like that. Just be obedient. Do what the man tell you if you want your job. Now I wrestle old Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior so many times. They start believing that wrestling was real. Steroids have blown their mind. Now if you don't like what I'm saying, we don't need no ring. It's Kamala time now. Time for me to make a scene. No more tackles. No more leapfrogs. No more bear hugs. No more arm drag. Drop down, get it again. No more top rope. No more headbutts. No more time to go home. Stay and fight like a man. Push it and pull it. Push it and pull it. The fat little Dennis starts screaming like a girl. Push it. Ooh. They thought I was dumb and tried to talk over my head. I remember one night the Brooklyn Brawler and Pat went to bed. I ain't lying. They checked in right next door to me. They sure did. So late that night, I tried to get a little sleep. I heard the Brawler tell Pat, I'm gonna rock your world. Few minutes later, old Pat starts screaming like a girl. Whoa, push it, ram it, push it, shove it. If I had gone round back, I could have made $1 million. It don't turn me on to hear a damn man holler, whoa, push it, push it hard. You know, there were good opportunities in the form of WWF back in the day, and I don't think it has changed, only the name to protect the innocent. There were bright lights, plenty of mud packing. Oh yeah, and if you wanted a job, all you have to do is just bring you a good pair of knee pads and your steroids. If you want to look good for a short time,
let them know you're trying to please.
That's one of their requirements. Don't worry about passing the drug test, because if you're liked by WWF officials, then you're in. Why I didn't do it? Because I didn't want my body deteriorating. And what worked for you may not work for me. You know what I mean? You know, it makes you do things when you're on that stuff, like kill yourself and other people. Okay, I think I've said enough. I don't mean any harm, nothing personal against anybody. Okay, you guys, take it easy now. Be careful. Love you, brothers. You gotta push it like this, pull it like that. You got to pack all of that mess. Push it and pull it. Push it and pull it. Okay, look, I gotta get up out of here. I gotta get back in the old truck. I'll see y'all later. Y'all take care. Bye bye.
Man, we're wide open once again. Somebody tells me you working on a Sunday?
Yeah, well, we're just doing some stuff around the building today, trying to get things up to par.
That was my Saturday too. We didn't actually run last night. But we just had some. Sometimes in this old business, you put things off too long and they stack up on you. So you got to take a little off time and just clean the house a little bit, and that's part of what we did. But do you guys have a show last night?
Dude, let me tell you, we had two shows last night.
Oh, man. Well, yeah. Who booked that? What a crowd of crazy maniac would do something.
I'm a moron. We were in Teleco. Georgia Premier Wrestling was at Teleco Plains, Tennessee at 6 p.m., which is about 2 hours down the road. And then Deep Southern Championship Wrestling had a show at 7 last night, featuring ladies matches called Girls Night Out 2. So, but we pulled it all off somehow, and on to the next thing.
How did that ladies tournament go? I know I saw a lot of names on there I recognized and some particularly interesting matchups.
Well, originally it was going to be a tournament, and I had some other girls, like Crazy Mary Dobson and some other girls on the card, and they had to leave because they had a Shine Recordings, I believe is what it was. And so we just turned it into ladies' matches. So I featured three ladies' matches and three men's matches, but the semi and the main were ladies' matches. The main event was Dementia Rose taking on Casey Carlisle. It was a pretty good match. And then in the semi, we had Tiffany Rocks taking on Priscilla Kelly. That was a pretty strong match also.
Oh, Priscilla Kelly is one of those that is very interesting to me. You know, she's hasn't been doing this for very long, and she's gotten some breaks pretty quickly. Is she holding up her end of the bargain?
Yeah, she's I honestly believe she's a next-level wrestler. I really do believe he gets to the right people and keeps working with the right people. I honestly believe Priscilla is a next level ladies wrestler. I really do.
And she is incredibly young. I think that's the thing that I always forget. I mean, she is very young, so it can get out away from you when you're that young and things start to come pretty quickly to you. That
She's really humble. There's some things that I've noticed about her before I ever booked her. I was at Empire one night, and she was down there with Chip. And after the show was over, she was putting chairs up.
Yeah.
And then she was at my show one night, and after the show was over, she helped put chairs up too. And that's something you just don't see. And that's a pretty good quality that I appreciate.
You don't see that nearly as much as I hear a lot of people say they would like to, especially these days. And that's just, a lot of that gets past even training, and that's home training, as we used to call it, regardless of what you learned about the wrestling business. If you didn't got no home training, it's going to be hard for you to learn those lessons in the first place.
That's a fact. I can say that one good thing about my crew, man. Them guys put in the work. I mean, from start to finish. I got about 6 or 8 core guys where they're setting up, they're tearing down, and they're actually wrestling also. But doing it all.
Yeah. Well, as we usually do on this show, we have a bit of a theme usually, and today is no different. We're going to talk, and this is certainly something that I'm heavily involved in. We're going to talk to some guys who are running shows who have, as I've been told, and everybody who's been in my position has been told, have never laced up the boots. Guys that got into the wrestling business without being wrestlers first. And I know firsthand that when I was talking about learning lessons, and in the same way, I had to learn those lessons, and you have to learn them really quickly when you're sort of the guy who is in charge a little bit. Because if you mess up, not only do people lose respect for you, but the whole show can go to pot pretty quickly if you're not on the up and up. So we're going to talk to some guys today about that, because it is – I've been, like most of us, I'm either reading a wrestling book or listening to another podcast or something. And one of the things that I heard consistently before I got into the business was people saying, the marks have no place in the business. What are they doing here? And, it kind of would always take me back because, well, who else would want to be in this thing if they didn't love it in the first place? You kind of there's some entry level. You have to like it at some point to want to get in it, unless you're, just a businessman looking for a good business opportunity. But I think you and I both know that if you're a businessman looking for a good business opportunity, then indie wrestling is probably much higher on the risk scale than you would like to invest in.
Yes. The word mark is pretty deep. I consider I'm a mark. Anybody that loves the wrestling business is a mark, And, so like you said, you got to love it, And just, you got sold to the wolves. If you think about it, you never ran a show. Been, a fan, and I mean, you were an intelligent fan, but you didn't get thrown just into the running wrestling part, but you also thrown in the booking part, being very green, and that's a very rare thing.
Incredibly green, and not only just not having a lot of experience, having no training in wrestling, just, managing for a little while. Not only that, I was booking the thing that I cared most about. It's not that I didn't get to, like in the territory days. If you wanted to eventually book Dallas, maybe they'd send you to Amarillo for a little while, or maybe they'd send you out to Waco or somewhere to go get yourself right, and to work with some other guys and get ready to go. But now, we didn't have that luxury. Now, what I did have was there were 4 of us that started, and so I had people to lean on. And at the time, when Stephen Platinum and I didn't want to kill each other, I had him as well. who, you know, and I would imagine that was a lot different than people would expect it to be, given Steve's proclivities for yelling and throwing stuff. Luckily,
his strong personality, maybe.
Yeah. But I, with me, I didn't have to deal with that, just because I think he understood that in order for us to make this work, we had to get there together and we kind of had to grow. And so when I would make a mistake, and I certainly did, it wasn't the vengeful Stephen Platinum that I had to deal with, that I'm dealing with now constantly, which is odd. I do things well, and he goes crazy. And when I was trying to figure my way out, that's when he had the gentle hand. But different. That's a different
maybe,
story for a different
maybe,
day. But
maybe he's jealous of the way it's went. You know,
well,
maybe you're making you're picking things up and making it stand
a little too quickly. And didn't and didn't have to nubble under his arm as much as he would have liked me to. But yeah, but we just you know we just started doing the thing and you know with a little luck and a little bit of help in the right places we've gotten. I hesitate to say turned around because I don't think PCW was in the dumps when we started it. It wasn't what it had been, and through and that wasn't a person's fault. Shane Mackey was in that spot before us, and you know Shane, he had it much worse than we did because it's kind of like I'm going to make an Alabama football analogy. There's a shock. It's kind of like Ray Perkins. It didn't matter what Ray Perkins did; he was following Bear Bryant, so it really didn't matter what happened. He couldn't have done well.
Right.
But what Mackey did was get things. He kept the train rolling. And he kept it on the tracks. And so by the time we were ready to go and take that thing over, we were in a position to succeed. But it took a lot of lessons to be learned, and I think we've got our first guest on the line now. And you talk about somebody who feels the wrath of Stephen Platinum a lot. Here's a guy who I think will have some common ground to stand on with that. But he kind of took the wrestling world by storm over the last couple of years here in Georgia, even getting up all the way until Southern Pride was promotion of the year. And joining us now is Mr. Charles Anschutz. Charles, we got you?
Well, I'm here in living color. How are y'all doing?
Doing
good,
very
Charles.
Well.
Good. I appreciate y'all having me on.
Well, yeah, Charles, you fit the bill for this show pretty well. We're talking about, you know, guys that got into wrestling that – had no real prior experience as a wrestler, you know, wasn't really trained up as a wrestler, didn't go through all the hardships that wrestlers expect you to go through before you say you're in the business, and sort of how your path has been. So right off the bat, you had a show last night in a brand-new venue. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, we went up to Lawrenceville, Georgia last night in Gwinnett County, had our first ever event up there, a smaller venue, a little concert hall. Probably about the size of what you guys have in Porterdale, just a little bit bigger, but and we were really happy. We drew 145-ish, somewhere in that ballpark, 140 to 150. And but the biggest thing is we had a really good show. People were happy. When we got to perform in front of about 50 to 60 new fans last night, people who had never been to our show before. And that's the idea. You know, I keep telling everybody, you know, everybody wants to go to this town, that time, and the town, and the other, and it's expansion, but it's smart expansion. And And so, what we got out of those 50 or 60 people last night, I've already got three groups who've never been to our show before, about 12 people total, who've already reserved tickets for the next show at Monroe. Now, so that's the idea. That's what we're looking for. You want to establish a new base there if we continue to run there, but you want to draw people into your main show. So if at least selling, getting 12 new customers to Monroe out of that happens, then that show pays for itself in a couple of shows in Monroe, and that's what I'm looking for.
Well, yeah. You know, hearing stuff like that makes me feel good about the wrestling business nowadays. You're doing a really good job, Charles.
Well, I appreciate that, Woody. You know, I study what everybody does. I like to say I don't stick my nose in everything that goes on in Georgia, but I – between reading and hearing, I like to say my finger's on the pulse of just about everything that's going on in Georgia. And guys like you, you know, you're doing a great job. The, you know, guys down in Barnesville now are doing a great job. PCW is drawing really good crowds these days. I was over there a couple months back and had a really good time. You know, of course, Peach State's drawing good. Hopefully the Cornelia crowd's going to get there and they're going to do well. You know, just all over, it's a good time. It's a good time for wrestling in Georgia these days.
And so you started Southern Fried. Well, have you been, has that been 3 years ago now, Charles?
June will be 3 years. Actually,
yeah.
The first initial discussions were in March of that year. So actually next month will be 3 years when we decided to start. And the initial show actually was going to be down in Eatonton, Georgia. And then the deal fell through with the gym down there. They had some issues. And I had talked with Chris. Now, Chris is a guy who kind of helped me get started, kind of get my feet in the door with some of the guys. And so I said, well, hell, are we scrounging trying to find venues here? I can find five places in Monroe to run this thing. Let's do it in Monroe. It's in my hometown. I know people here. I've got contacts here. You know, 30 minutes later, I had a venue in Monroe, and we were ready to rock and roll. And, you know, we ran that first show at the American Legion, which was a very small building. We literally turned people away, first show, 280 people. I don't think we could have put anybody else in the building that night. And we did two shows there, drew 280 and about 265. And I said, well, we got to have a bigger place. We went to the National Guard Armory. First two shows there combined drew over 700. And
wow.
And we've done really well. You know, we went through a little lull last year, last summer, and I think that's part of our main storyline. We lost a member of that story for a little while, and a lot of my attention was directed elsewhere with some things I had going on in other places. And but I think we finally grabbed back a hold to our, you know, what we're doing, and we're trying to make some things happen again.
Now, I've been in your locker room a number of times, and you have always been the boss. And that's not easy to do when you're not a wrestling guy. And that's the thing. I remember I had this conversation with several people, and I was talking to the guy. He was sort of in the same boat that we were. We didn't have training. We had been around the business. We loved the business, but we just weren't trained to be in it, but we were in it. We had found our way in it sometimes. And you know, the thing that people always say is, that guy's not a wrestling guy. And he asked, he said, well, when do you become a wrestling guy? What do I have to do to become a wrestling guy? Because I feel like I put in the work. Did people give you stick? Did you have to work harder to become the boss because you had never put the boots on and never got in the ring?
There was some of that. I mean, I think our initial group was just eager to do something new and to actually run shows where you maintain storylines from one show. You know, one of the things, there were two pet peeves I had because I would go around to other shows and watch stuff. I'd gotten back into watching because of my son. My son had gotten up to the age where he got interested in wrestling. So that got me back to going, which was a good, convenient excuse. got me back in the door of just being at the shows. And two things that always pissed me off when I went to the show. If you tell me the show starts at 7 o'clock, don't put the first damn match in the ring at 7:45. You just wasted 45 minutes of my life and I'll never get back. And that's one thing I
my own mind.
I pride myself on the fact, no matter what happens, we've probably never been over 5 or 6 minutes after 7 starting a show. And that's my number one pet peeve. And number two is, and it still happens, and I hate it. You see guy on Friday night in one town, and two guys are beating the living hell out of each other and cussing one another, talking about their mamas. The next night, they're 20 miles away, and they're best friends, and they're tag team champions. And I know I'm old school, but keep a little kayfabe alive. You know, I mean, Jesus. And so that's what we wanted to do. And you know, unfortunately, we guys work in so many towns now and so many different companies, you can't do that like you want to. You know, I would love to go back to the days where you actually had guys under contract and they worked for you and they did what you needed them to do and they didn't go somewhere else and do something completely different.
Yeah,
we can't control that, so we just have to make the best of it.
But yeah, what was the first time it slapped you? Yeah, go ahead, Charles.
I would say back to the original question. I think people had to see that, you know, that I was serious. I made a commitment when we first started, no matter what. No matter if nobody shows, you know, whatever happens, I'm committing to three shows. I'm putting money up for three shows. We'll see what happens, and then we'll go from there. And the first night, I was sitting there before the show, and I'm like, just please, Lord, let 50 people show up. You know, just you know, don't let, like, 15 people show up. And, you know, hour and a half before
that
the show,
is the
literally, literally wrapped around the corner of the building an hour and a half before the show started. And so that was a huge relief. And you know what? Damn it, they came back. So,
yeah.
But you know, I think a lot of it was, and what hurt me more than anything is being new and not having connections. I wanted to bring a better, higher quality show. Initially starting, you know, I had some good guys, top of the card, lower end of the card wasn't, you know, it wasn't where I wanted it to be. But you have to get what you can, you know, it's all I had. And I appreciate those guys. Those guys work their asses off to get better talent in. You know, I had to pay more than everybody else did. You know, if somebody, just to throw numbers out there, if Joe Blow's getting $40 here, well, I'm having to pay him $60 to come work my show because he doesn't know me. He doesn't know anything about my show. Now, eventually, as word got out that we were consistently putting 300 people in the building, it kind of turned the other way around, and all those people who I was having to beg to come work were begging me to come work. And so that was a huge difference and a huge change for us.
Yeah, people want to go where the crowds are, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Hey, Charles,
they want to be seen.
I was going to ask you something. You were talking about getting venues and stuff. I run into this problem. I want to know if you run into this problem. A lot of times when you go to these, you go looking for a new venue, do you get treated like wrestling's the devil and some idiot there 3 or 4 months before you give wrestling a bad name? Do you run into that problem a lot?
Yes, I read the place that we actually call home was a school gym that we were using. A church owned the building there. It had an autistic school in there, and they had a gym that was set and it wasn't being used. We got in there. It was absolutely perfect for what we wanted. We could leave our stuff set up. It was awesome and amazing. We ran 5-6 shows there. Everything went perfect. We cleaned the place up. It looked better than it ever looked, you know, in years. So I get a call one day to come meet with the folks, and I think, well, they're probably going to go up on the rent. But that's okay. You know, we're doing okay. So I walk in, and they tell me, you're not going to be able to do it here anymore. And I'm like, and I was floored. And I'm like, well, why? Well, you know, the church board got together and they just don't think they want to do the wrestling thing here anymore. And, you know, just that was probably as close as I ever come to just quitting then. Because I did, you know, we went above and beyond. I mean, we cleaned that place up. We mopped the floors every day. And every time we were there, we did everything. And then just to be hit out of left field, no warning. And literally had like 3 weeks to scrounge together a venue to do a show, in which we had to go back to the American Legion with a 4-foot high ring and a 12-foot ceiling. And I had listen to me, I had Moose, Cody Hall, Darkmon, Peter, all four.
You had the tallest roster in the state.
And we almost broke a ceiling fan, and we had one tile come down. So,
wow.
And that stuff is disheartening. And then you approach some of these towns and they'll say, hey, you know, I'd like to come down and do a wrestling show. And one of the last group that was here left to play some mess, and they didn't pay us I'm not the last group. You know, go Google Southern Fried Championship Wrestling. Ask around. We have a good reputation. You know, your place is going to look better when I leave it than it does when I get there.
Yeah,
and
that's what we're always.
Yes, but you run into that so much. Well, the last group came in here, and they just done mad, and then you'll try to go behind. Well, there was a group here before, and they promised that they were going to have, you know, Tommy Wildfire Rich, and they were going to have, you know, Mick Foley, and they were going to have this, that, and the other, and they showed up with 10 guys we'd never heard of. Well, you know, if we advertise them, they told us and promised us that they were coming. Now, you know, sometimes it doesn't happen the way you want it to, and things, you know, things go wrong, but pretty much everybody, except for once, one or two occasions that we've advertised, has been there. So, but you run into all that type of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I know one thing that helped me tremendously was I had a good crew around me that vouched for me. I had, you know, people who I was close to were like, oh, if that guy says he's okay, then that guy, he must be okay. Who were some of those guys that did that for you?
You know, I brought the first show. We had Tommy Rich wrestled. We had Tommy Ian, Tommy wrestled. Terry Lawler, great guy, one of my favorite guys around. Terry put in a lot of good words for me. Terry's brother Steve, who's well respected in this state wrestling for 30 years now, actually just came that night to check the show out. Hadn't worked in a while and was so damn excited about what we had going on. You know, he's a wrestler. He's an old carny. He sees the crowd. He wants to get back into it. And, you know, we talked, and Steve and Terry both helped me along tremendously. And, you know, they would put the word out to people, and it grew. You brought different people in. You know, I targeted my first two targets. I go back. I don't know if I've told anybody this. We had a little core group there. But my first two targets were people who I'd seen in Borderville. And the guy who I still sell today, and anybody can argue with me if they want to, and I'll tell them they're all full of shit. The best damn worker in the state is Fred Yehi. I've been supporting Fred Yehi for 3 years. He was the first person who I wanted to bring in 3 years ago. And I was told, well, you know, those guys work other places. You'll probably never get them to Monroe. Well, being new, I said, okay. you know, I stuck my lip out and said, okay. Number two was Pandora. And I love their work. I love their work ethic. I love their matches. I was told the same thing that, well, you'll never get, she'll never come here and work. And I had, Chris was kind of, you know, contacting wrestlers for me at that point, lining folks up. And I said, screw that. You know, I got contacts with them. Third show, I had both of them on the show. Most people don't realize that Fred and Pandora have been with me since our third show, which would have been August of 2013. And...
Yeah, I remember them going to those shows and not knowing what it was. I was like, what are y'all talking about? My first question is, where in the hell is Monroe? What are y'all talking about? This Monroe show, this thing. And then next thing I knew, oh, well, it's the promotion of the year.
Boom.
And you know, there was a fuel there and a passion there once I got started because I wanted, you know, I talked with Chris when I started. I said, I don't want to be 12 fat guys rolling around in the ring. I want a good show. I want a quality show. Yes, I want old school. I want people to come to the show and think they're back in 1976 watching Mr. Wrestling 2 and Ole Anderson. I also want them to be able to see stuff that's out there now that I enjoyed wrestling, the early ECW stuff, the early Ring of Honor stuff. I want to give everybody a good mix of all of that. And I don't know if you were there that night. I know Shane Marks, and who was Shane's old partner? Kincaid.
It was me and Shane and Casey Kincaid.
If I remember right, you guys were there for our infamous Shaking Ring night.
We were there for the infamous Shaking Ring. Yes, we were.
You know, we did every damn thing we needed to do that night, and we could not get that ring to do right. And, you know, but I, you know, if you remember, I came to the back and told him, hey, look, the ring is safe. It just doesn't look good. But if nobody wants to work, I'll give you gas money. You can go home. You know, I'm not going to hold it against you. Everybody stayed. Everybody worked. We had, geez, I have a number off the top of my head, was about 375 that night. Show went well except for the ring. And I'd been trying so hard to get noticed by Larry Goodman or Georgia Wrestling Now or anybody in the state who was anything. Well, then I finally got noticed. The video was up of our ring shaking all over the damn place. And, you know, see, I've never told this out loud to anybody, so you guys are getting exclusive stuff here. And you're talking about, like, being royally pissed off. I'm like, I'm drawing... 350 people a show average, and I can't get a damn breath on a show or anything. And one little shaky ring one night, and I'm plastered all over creation. But you know what? You know what that did? It made me work harder. And
we got the ring fixed.
You got the damn ring fixed. You got that right. I'll take care of it today. And we haven't had that problem yet. We did have a bad night at one show, but other than that, we've been okay with that. And I also remember our first Shindig show. which was June of 2014, which I still say is one of the top two or three shows we ever did. If people would go back and see what we actually had going on, and like the people we had there, who everybody's on their nuts today, well, we were on their nuts years ago before anybody else knew who they were. I was bringing Yehi, Chase Owens, and those type people in. And, I mean, just having tremendous work that night. And we drew the biggest crowd ever. We drew 465 people that night. And I tune in on Monday night to Georgia Wrestling Now with Jonathan Williams, and I don't remember who was with him then. I don't know if it was Wheeler or who was hosting with him. Okay, and they come on, and I think they had Larry on as well. They said, well, you know, Peach State drew 225, and they talked about, like, three different, maybe Cornelia, I can't remember who. They talked about three different shows, and we had the most amazing show ever, and I outdrew those three shows put together. And it never got a mention. And I'm like, what do I have to do? You know? And you know what finally got attention? I bought Cornelia. Yeah. I bought Cornelia, and then everybody started, well, hey, let's see what he's doing in Monroe. And then people hit me up now and say, I can't believe, I never knew you had this match. You know, I never knew you were booking Moose when nobody else in Georgia was booking Moose. And
you are
now. Now, you know, I just talked with him the other day. We were going to have him in a couple of weeks, but the Ring of Honor conflict was not going to happen. But anyway, I take pride.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, though. Let's talk about the purchase of Cornelia, because, again, you did everything you did in Monroe, and if you spell that for him, a lot of that happened in a vacuum, right? People weren't noticing. You were doing your thing. You were being successful financially. You were drawing big houses. But when you bought Cornelia, again, everybody's looking at you like, who is this? And the balls on this guy, the Southern Fried guy, just bought the esteemed Anarchy. Give me one story about the time where you just had to look and say, again, what do I have to do to get these people's respect?
You know, the first story I'll tell there, and I don't know that I've shared it with a lot of people, the initial meeting to buy Anarchy Wrestling, there was a meeting arranged by Nigel Sherrod, who was working for me at that time and was good friends with Rick Michaels. Most people don't know the original idea is that Rick and I were going to buy Cornelia together. I was going to promote, Rick was going to book, and that's what was going to happen. After some talk, some discussions, that fell through. And so I made it known to Franklin at that time, although Rick and I weren't going to do it together, I was still interested, as were a lot of people. And, you know, for whatever reason, they finally decided to make the decision to sell it to me, in which I was glad, I was grateful. Looking back, I would have done a lot of things different. And you'll have to buy the shoot interview that I'm going to do years down the road when I don't care about pissing anybody off. And I'll tell you all that. The things I would have done differently. Because I talk about a lot, and there's no hatred or animosity, nothing like that. People up there, you know, there were some guys up there who were really great to me. I got to meet some people who I never would have gotten to meet. Bill Barron's has forgotten more than most people will ever know. He's a true professional. But, you know, we were at a point where I think I bought a ship that was probably already sinking.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I should have gone in instead of trying to plug a hole here and there, just like completely tear a wall out and redo a whole new wall. And I'll kind of leave it kind of in that vein of what I should have done. But it became obvious that it was never going to be, if I did the things I wanted to do there, then I really wasn't going to be liked. And so the opportunity come to get out with somebody who I was comfortable selling it to, who had tradition in the building, it made sense, and, you know, we did it. Unfortunately, I had no clue the night that we had the last Anarchy show that it would be the last Anarchy show, or we would have done things a lot different for that. But, you know, it went swimmingly well, and the one thing I tell people, and I know people have talked about it, that show drew great, and it was a $15 show. And that show put me in the profit for my 8 months in Cornelia. A lot of people will say, well, he lost his ass up there. Well, I was losing it, but that show was enough to get me Barely. If I told you what the numbers were, you would laugh, but it's something along the lines of $67. In my 8 months up there, I came out to the good. So which doesn't matter, you know, but it's fun and interesting to talk about.
Well, Chuck, I don't want to monopolize your Sunday afternoon, but there is something I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to tell you it's going to be a tough one, but because this is just one of those things that has always – I don't bothered me is not the right word, but it's two different schools of thought, right? And you said on here a number of times that you drew this many, and we equate what you draw to mean the show is good. And in a lot of ways, that's the absolute truth because you're in the business to make money. But – what happens if the crowd, if your show stays the level that it is of quality, but the houses go down? How do you then how do you explain that if the draw is the only thing that matters?
And the draw, first of all, let me say, people who draw well are always going to throw that number out there. People who draw shit are never going to want to talk about what they draw. That's the nature of the beast, and that's me being 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
There's a fine line there that I battle. I can sit here and tell you right now, Chris Nelms and his group, Chris has taken more shit than anybody in this state. Is Chris a great wrestler? No. Matter of fact, if you'd been in Lawrenceville last night, you could have seen me beat the holy shit out of him last night. but that's beside the point. You know what happens, though? He draws. People come to see him. They come to see that group. They have heat. There are people, 40, 50 people every show that come to see them. Now, like I said, is he Jimmy Rave? Well, no, he's not Jimmy Rave. He's never going to be Jimmy Rave, and he knows he's never going to be Jimmy Rave. Okay? But he can be good, and if you put him in there. What I say with my guys is just like my job, my real job. You put people in a place to succeed, to be successful. You don't put the 6'5", 385-pound guy, a goddamn wide receiver. He plays left tackle, you know. He plays left tackle, or he plays nose guard, or defensive end, or defensive tackle. You don't put a guy that runs a 5'6", 40 at tailback. I mean, you put people in the right position. And, you know, if you're expecting – when I have Fred Yehi there, I don't put Fred Yehi in the ring with Chris Nelms. I get Steve Platinum every chance I get about booking Chris Nelms in a match with Wardell Walker. I always get it. We have a funny video of myself, Chris, and Wardell in the bathroom in Monroe filming a video making fun of that. No disrespect. I think a lot of Steve, but we jab at each other every chance we get.
Oddly enough, though, Charles, the thing about that particular match is, I was having a conversation about this very thing earlier today. You can look back at what Chris was doing when that happened and where Chris has gone since then, and Chris came out better for it.
Yes, he did.
While there was a time when the whole wrestling world was giving Chris hell because of that incident, Chris is the one who's still getting booked 3 or 4 times a weekend now, and Chris is the one who has worked himself into doing exactly what he wants to do.
That's exactly right. He's getting bookings that other people can't get, that people want to talk shit, but they can't get the booking. But, you know, getting back to what we're talking about, you know, there's a fine line. If I had some of the biggest crowds I drew, I had some of my worst shows. I am my own worst critic on my show. Believe me. If you could be, because one thing that I do different than a lot of people is I'm out there. Because you're out there, Matt, because you're announcing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm out there. Don't see me. While that show's going on, you don't see my big ass in the locker room. How can I comment or see what's going on or judge what's going on if I'm back in the locker room kissing somebody's ass or reaming somebody out or whatever? I'm out there watching that show, and I have my phone is with me, and there's a little note thing where I can hit record, and I make notes here. The goddamn ring announcer screwed up. The music didn't get started on. What the hell did he follow that move up with that move, you know? And then I go back on Monday, Tuesday, after I've had time to absorb it, and I go back and review that stuff, and then I call AJ Steele, who's my booker, and say, and I ask him those same questions. What Jesus was that? Why in the hell did you do that? Why Harlan Hayes win a cup match when Chip Day and Cameron Cade were in it, you know? Most of the time, he can explain it to me, you know, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's what I do, and you know, I want the best show possible. I've always tried to pay guys on what I thought the crowd was going to be. It's never been about making a dime for me in this business. I got things I can do to make money. I don't need money. You know, I do okay in life. I do it because I didn't want to see guys get in their car and drive 3 hours or 4 hours to work in front of 17 people and get $10 and a hot dog. I wanted guys to be paid to get something for what they were doing and to have an opportunity to show what they can do. And I've told these guys, hey, if you come and you give it all for me, I'll do everything I can to push you every chance I get, put you in the ring with good people, and do some really crazy things. And while I got you guys here, I want to make a couple quick announcements, if you don't mind me doing it, and then I'll get out of your hair.
I was just about to ask you about what you had going on coming up just a little bit, because I know it's something big.
Well, you know, Matt, the promoters, we never get out of that business. We got to promote. And if I was selling underwear right now, I'd have both of y'all over the box shipped out here before we got off the phone. March 12th, 2 weeks away, we got the big Charlie Smith show coming up, appreciation show. Charlie's a friend of wrestling in Georgia for 65, 70 years now. A true legend in this state. We've got Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, Ole Anderson, Thunderbolt Patterson, Tommy Rich, B. Brian Blair, and I'm going to forget so many people. Glacier's going to be in the house. So many more. Just a lot of who's who in Georgia wrestling. I'm pretty sure Bill Eady, Mass Superstar Demolition Axe, is going to be there. He hasn't confirmed completely yet, but he's planning on being there. Ranger Ross, Randy Rose, you know, a lot of great guys, and we're going to have a good show that night. I'm really excited about it. I think we may push the envelope there for our biggest crowd ever. I'm hoping, you know, you never know. To the crowd gets in there, you never, never know. Pre-sale has been amazing, and so hopefully that will go well. All the money raised is going in Charlie's name to the Cauliflower Alley Club, a benevolent fund to help the older wrestlers out as they get older in times of need. And we want to raise a lot of money. We're going to have auctions. WWE sent a care package down to us with some stuff to sell. We wrote them, and they were really gracious in doing that for us. So that's a good thing. And I want to announce, excuse me, June 4th is our big shindig show. That's my baby every year. We have Jimmy Ray come in. First time Jimmy's ever been at Southern Fried. Jimmy will be there at night, and he will be working Slim J. And I think that match will be – there's no way Jimmy Ray and Slim J can have a bad match. I'm so excited to see that. Nobody else knows this except Slim, I think. I don't think Jimmy knew he was working. But they're going to be there at night. I've dipped back into the past. I spent a little time at Cornelia. I've dipped back in Cornelia's past. And Air Paris and David Young.
What?
Oh, ow.
Will be appearing. Air Paris, and not only that, Air Paris will be wrestling. Not sure with David yet, but Air Paris will be wrestling at the June 4th Shindig in Monroe, Georgia. He'll be in the ring. He's working out hard. He's been looking forward to it. He's teased it a few times. We put it out there. I can now officially say both of them will be in Monroe, Georgia that night. And we just closed the deal late yesterday afternoon. Cedric Alexander will be making his debut at Southern Fried Championship Wrestling on that June 4th Shindig show.
Wow.
So, in about
loaded for bear, my friend.
On Facebook, reserving seats soon. And, yeah, you got to be there because we're still working on that. I got feelers out on a couple more people. That's the big party, we like to call it. And we want to see everybody there.
Well, Charles, thank you so much for spending a little time with us, man. Yeah, I know. Charles has loaded it up.
Hey,
you better get your ticket reserved, Woody.
I love talking to you guys. I got to meet Woody a few weeks ago and, you know, always admired what he does and how he runs his business. And Matt, you know how I feel about you. What Matt doesn't get credit for, Matt does great on radio. Matt doesn't get credit. Matt is one hell of a heel manager. And I don't say that about too many people. Matt is one hell of a heel manager. And I know in Porterville they all love him over there, and they think he's God's gift to life. But he needs to go back out there and kick a few of the fans and do something, because he's such a great heel, and I miss that.
Well, Charles, I really do appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a great day. And I know y'all forgot to wish me happy birthday. It's my birthday. That's right. In y'all's behalf, I'm going to wish my damn self a happy birthday.
Well, happy birthday.
I mean, yeah,
all
right,
you
know
that.
You've been a
great. I listen every time you guys are on. I might not get to hear it when it's played, but usually the next day or two, I listen to you guys and Steve's show every week. And keep up the good work. Y'all doing a great job.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate that. You've been a great guest.
Hey, I can talk. I can talk, man. I tell you what, you just don't know.
Well, Brother Woodrow, we've got another guest on the line. I'm going to let you handle the introductions on this one.
Okay. This is a guy that I love to hate. This is my partner in Georgia Premier Wrestling, Mr. Daryl Morris.
We got
you on the line, Daryl?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Hear you fine.
Hey, man. Hey, Woody. Good to be on the show, buddy. I appreciate you asking.
Well, sorry that Charles got a little winded on us, but we got nothing but time. We got nothing time, but yeah, like I said, the theme of our show is guys in the wrestling business that's never laced up a pair of boots. And, you know, we just kind of want to talk to you and what about your thoughts on the wrestling business from your point of view. And, Matt, you want to hit him up with some questions?
Yeah, why were you crazy enough to get in bed with Woody? That's issue number one.
I guess he's like a woman. He's just a smooth talker and can reel people in. You know what I'm saying?
Well, he'll do that. He's got me a time or two on that trick.
You
jumped in this thing feet first, man. You're not playing around. You and Woody are running. You hit the ground running hard. We kind of established, you know, that it can be tough and you got to get respect from the guys. But from your part particularly, you got that money on the line, man. you are laying out some of your own hard-earned cash. How do you get prepared for that? How do you rationalize that? And how do you adjust that with the rest of your life, knowing that you're making this big financial investment?
Well, my wife says every time I get into something, it's like that. It's not just little. It's wholehearted or nothing with me. So when I got started, I went to one of Woody's shows and seen it and enjoyed it and went to a couple of more, and Woody came over and sat down beside me and just asked me, hey, how you doing? I'm a loud, boisterous person myself. And we got to talking, and I asked him basically if he would do a benefit show, because a lot of people know this, that I'm a 7-year lymphoma cancer survivor, and I work closely with Relay for Life, and I asked him if he'd do a benefit show for that, and he's like, yeah, buddy, I'm game, let's do it. And that's basically where it started from. We did that show, and it drew good, and I was like, let's try this again. And we went from there, and here we are today where we're at now.
And Woody, is he any count?
Oh, dude, let me tell you, I've learned a lot from Daryl. You know, he has a good mind for wrestling, kind of like you, Matt. And Daryl's a good businessman, and where I can be a bit sporadic, and Daryl's good about keeping me real in 90% of the time. You know, he's good. He's good for the business.
Go ahead, Daryl.
Yeah, one thing that you was talking about respect. When we first started, I told Woody, I said, you know, I'm not going to jump into this and start trying to talk to people and tell people what. I wouldn't even go into the locker room for 6 months. I told him, I said, you know, I want to help with loading the ring, breaking down the ring, setting up, you know. I didn't do it for 6 months. I never went back there. I said, you know, a man to me should pay his dues, whether he's got 5 cents in this business or $5,000 in this business. And that's the way I was. I actually just the last, four or five shows, I've actually started going back, doing some writing and stuff like that.
Yep.
And, you know, I wanted to earn respect. That's how people get respect. They earn respect. You give it and you'll get it. And the guys really have been really took to me good. And, you know, I've just little by little built what we've gotten. And, you know, Georgia Premier Wrestling is a spot show where we go from here to there to yonder, and sometimes we hit some good spots, and Woody, you know, as a couple of weeks ago, sometimes you hit some bad spots, but it's a lot of fun. We did a show a couple of weeks ago, and it didn't draw so good. We had about 25 of our regular people there, and then down there where we were running, I think we had about 15 of people that knew nothing about us came that night. So that was one of them spots where you went, let's back up and punt and try again. But then again, we ran last night in a place, and it was great. You know, you just never know.
When you get that first punch in the mouth, what is your first reaction to it? When you do, because I Lord knows I've been there too, and you look out at the house and you're like, man, I don't. What did we do? Did we not have? Did we just forget to tell anybody? What did we do? Like, what do you? How did you handle it?
Well, the first time we really got a little bit of a bust in the mouth was in Canton, Georgia, and we set up and, you know, we went and we hung posters and did all the stuff. We even advertised in the paper, had some good people booked, and we got there and, wow, we pulled about 40 people in there, and we're like, what the heck? And then we find out, guess what, guys? We wasn't thinking. Did you know that the NCAA football tournaments are going on tonight? That was really brainy to do this. And in that town, the lighting of the Christmas tree and the Christmas parade was going on. Guess what time? Exactly when we're running wrestling. So, you know, we found out that we just couldn't compete with the college football in the South and Santa Claus. So we said on that, and we're going to take our beating and come back again. And the second show we did was just unreal off the hook. So you never know. But a couple of weeks ago, the one we did in Woodstock, we did all the right stuff, but it just didn't work out. The area we're in, I said, we're not going to keep trying. Somebody said, let's do what we know. I said, nope. I said, you will not grow just going, well, let's just do this. And, you know, you can't keep going like that. So we're going to keep doing it, and, you know, we'll take our licks here and there, but, you know, that's just the nature of the beast.
We're not going back to Woodstock, though.
Not that building. I can tell you that much right now.
I think y'all have an interesting relationship in this anyways, and especially with Daryl being a little green to the wrestling side, not business in general, but to the wrestling part of it. But how do y'all manage your expectations when you think, you know, maybe the draw is going to be one thing, and then Woody's telling you, no, Daryl, I don't know, or maybe it just works the other way?
You know, it's because we're hitting new spots, neither one of us know what the draw is really going to be. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, let's go try it and see what happens, you know. And we look at, okay, these shows will pull us out from this, you know. We've gotten our self established in, you know, of course, Blue Ridge and LJ, Jasper, and now Canton's well established. And, you know, we want to hit these places every 6 weeks to 2 months that we're running. And so when we take a lick like we did in Woodstock, it just, you know, it's like it is what it is. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. It's what I told him the other day, you know. We just keep going and keep trying. So, I don't want to overrun a place.
Yeah. Go ahead, Willie. I feel like, was you jumping in?
One good thing about Dale, when we do hit a lick, he don't squander it. He puts it right back into the show. You know, we have this grove, entranceways, lights, new trailers, rings. That's anytime we hit a lick, Daryl puts it back into the show. So he's, you know, he's investing into something and he don't know a dime, you know, for it. So, you know, like I said, he has a good head on his shoulders, you know, and, you know, I believe, you know, that we're going to be able to make something happen out with GPW.
Yeah.
Hey,
What are you drawing from experience-wise, though, Daryl, to kind of make – because, you, like you said, you 6 weeks, hit this town, don't hit this town. What are you basing that off of? Have you got – is it just your other businesses that you've been involved in?
Just looking at how people run and, just watching. I learn a lot in my life by watching what things happen, you know. Just like wrestling, I've watched it all my life. from the time, you know, Mr. Wrestling 2, Thunder Oak, Patterson, Dusty Rhodes. I mean, man, I've been watching it since then, you know. And I've seen where just running, that you can run a town to death. That's why if you just go out there and give them a great show and hook them and then come back, you know, if you run every week, I just feel like if you run every week, then they're going to start feeling like, well, it's, you know, it's just the same old, some old. But, you know, WWE doesn't run the same place over and over and over. These big companies, they go from town to town, and it's something special. When you just give it to them every 6 weeks or 2 months, to me, that's giving them something special. And it makes them really want to come, where if you're doing it every week, they can go, oh, I won't go this week, I'll just go next week. Well, it's, you either come now or they're not going to get it again for 6 weeks or 2 months. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and Woody was talking about that. You know, most all of us have got a job through the week that we run, and that's what I make my living off of, is that job. And this job, this is basically, I hate to say hobby, but it's basically a hobby where I don't have to have that money, and just every bit of what we do make a lick goes right back in the company to make it, a somewhat of a production. You know what I'm saying, with the lights and the entrance way. You know, if you look good, you might be a 50-cent show, but if you've got a good-looking front out there, it means a lot. And not saying we've got a 50-cent show, because we got some really great guys. I wouldn't want to work with anybody else besides the guys we work with. I'll just be straight up with you on that. They're great
guys. You came in a pretty good ship to jump aboard on. Do you think you're still in your honeymoon period a little bit, or do you think you're kind of in your groove now?
Probably still in. You know, if a man ever quits learning, then I don't want to be around him. I mean, you know,
right.
I've been in the cabinet business for 33 years. I learn something all the time. You know, if a man quits learning, if he can't be taught by anybody, then I don't want to have anything to do with it, because he knows it all. And if anybody knows it all, they're in trouble. So, yeah, I just feed me.
Woody, I don't know what the promoter extent of this is, but I know for the guys working on the show that when you first get in and, man, you see your name in the main event, or you're in the semi-main, and you're really excited, and then after a while you get there and you look down at the main event and see you're in it, and you're like, man, can we move this up a little bit from time to time? I'm waiting for Daryl to have that moment.
Oh, trust me, he has them all the time. He's like, hey, we should do this. I got an idea. Mind never stops.
That's what he tells me all the time. Does your mind never stop? I said, I always sleep probably 6 hours a night. I mean, it's just crazy. My mind is totally running all the time, and something will pop in, and I'll just write it down, and I'll run it by Woody and see what he thinks about it. You know, it's just the way I am, the way I'm built, I guess.
It will be incredibly interesting, Daryl, to talk to you in a year's time.
He shoots down a lot of my stuff, and I shoot down a lot of his stuff. The thing, it's a good marriage, and we meet in the middle somewhere. We try to meet in the middle, and, you know, and Dale has some good ideas and some good stories, and we're actually running some of them right now.
And
I'm not too proud to say, okay, let's don't do this. You know what I'm saying? I know I don't know it all, and it's like, okay, if you don't like it, you've been doing this a lot of years, then give me something. Let's go back another way. Because I know I don't know.
And that
know
can
it
be
all.
Really
anybody
hard, especially when you're financially invested in something, and you got an idea that you're just married to, and you really want to do it, but for whatever reason the other half just thinks it's not a good idea. Man, that can be tough, but it sounds like y'all manage it pretty well.
I don't look at the money, just be honest with you. It doesn't matter if I put $3 in this company or $10,000 in this company.
Yeah.
Experience does it all. Woody has the experience, and when he says, I don't like it, and he gives me a good reason, I'm like, okay, that's good. I don't look at it, the money part of it. You know, a lot of people look at it like that. And whether I put $3 in this or $3 million, I'm just I'm a freshman. I'm learning, and, you know, I'm learning from the master, and that's the way I look at it. So,
well, it is refreshing.
That's why we don't argue.
We're getting good blood. That's why you don't argue. You just shut up.
usually when I shoot something down, I'll explain why I shoot it down. I don't know if they know it's stupid. We're not going to do it. I'll say, here's why this, you know, always think I'm a worst case scenario guy, and that's what I always try to think. You know, I look at it half empty instead of half full sometimes.
Yeah.
Well,
he backs me up, and I back him up.
Yeah, when you know what failure looks like, it can scare you. And we'll all kind of scramble to stay away from that as much as we can. But sometimes you're just going to have to – you got to leap out there, because I know we do it all the time. We're like, I don't know, this idea seems crazy, and the thing we tried, you know, 6 months prior that was similar to this didn't work. I don't know, this probably isn't going to work. But you know what? We got to be able to fail. You can't have a wrestling show if you're not able to fail. Because
Exactly. Everything's
not going to work, and as soon as you stop trying new things, then you become something else that I don't think any of us want to be. There are people who are happy being that, but I don't think any of us are those, and I don't think those people are ever the ones that are really successful.
Well, I'm sure anybody that's successful, they've got to be feeding off the crowd. I mean, that's what you do. You feed off the crowd, and you watch the crowd, and you know if something's working or not working by looking at the crowd. Last night, that crowd was just so hot, and, you know, it gives you that great feeling. You know what? You did something that make these people, they love it. You can see them. And when they're leaving, they go, when are you coming back? We want you back. Halfway through the show, the people that actually invited us up to, it was a benefit show we did last night. Halfway through the show, hey, we want y'all to come back. When can you come back? I mean, they want us back. And when you do that, it gives you such a good feeling. You know you did it right. You didn't offend people. You made them want to come back, and that's the greatest. That's what you feed off of. That's what I feed off of anyway.
Well, man, Daryl, great to hear from you, man. You're getting your sea legs, as they say. What's the next big show Georgia Premier's got coming up?
Well, we've got one in Blue Ridge next week, and then we've got so many bookings. We've got one in Blue Ridge. We've got one National Title Pond Blue Ridge is the second national title. Palm Blue Ridge is the ninth. We're also doing a benefit show here in Canton on the ninth. It's just one thing right after the other.
Relay for Life show.
The what show?
The Relay for Life show.
Yeah, we've got – actually, that was April I was looking at. Yep. We've got a Relay for Life show. That's the one that got me started that we'll be doing. That's going to be on the 12th. And every dollar of that we get coming through the door is going straight to Relay for Life. I mean, those people are what's helping do the research for cancer, and if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be around today. So, also, on the 26th, I have a Dark Horse show. That's up-and-coming wrestlers that are being noticed out there that we think is really going to be big before it's over. We're calling it the Dark Horse show. That's going to be in Canton, Georgia. We got a lot of great things coming up, I tell you. It's really exciting
and,
to be part of GPW.
I'm sure Tower of Doom 2 is coming up soon, right, Woody?
We're going to make it 3 rings this time.
Oh,
we have a 20, a 18, and a 16.
Woody, don't tell them about that third ring we just got, okay?
Oh, I'll keep that quiet.
Keep that a secret.
We have done it one more time. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on 3 the Hard Way. PCW will be Saturday, March the 5th, right in the beautiful, the immaculate, the better looking every time I go in there, Main Event Arena in Porterdale. And, yes, there are sandwiches in the front and liquor in the back. I don't know what else you could want. Wrestling, food, and booze. I don't know what else you could want. Georgia Premier, you just heard that pretty much you pick a day on your calendar and a town in Georgia. Just go there. They're probably running the show. Most likely, they're running the show. Thank you so much for joining us, and tune in next week where your tipping point will be there with the Asian bastard, Stephen Platinum, and the esteemed and immaculate Larry Goodman. Woody, we did it again, buddy. Thank you so much for being a part of it. Daryl, best of luck to you, man. Really glad you're doing well.
Thank you for asking me to be on.
Yeah.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.